This is Vacant Expressions, 1 hour of your life you will not get back. We are your hosts, Wesley and John Fox. We are sitting here on a Thursday, about the middle of September, late September, so kind of a slow, it's been a kind of a slow time of year for movies. So, but as it turns out, we both came across an interesting kind of, I think it was a straight-to-streaming movie, or one that was a limited release, called Upgrade. And it was freaking awesome, so we're going to talk about it. But yes, John is here. John, hello, how you doing, and what are you drinking?
I'm doing good. I was hoping you wouldn't ask me that. What I'm drinking today is actually a spiked seltzer water, lemon flavored, by this company, Ventura Lemon. No, wait. Naturally, I don't know. I don't know what company did it. Maybe it's called Spike Seltzers. It's got like a mermaid on it. I bought them for the music festival, you know, to have beforehand and stuff with the girls. And, yeah, I still had some left, so I'm finishing them off.
All right. What music festival and which girls?
with my fiance and her cousins. And we went to the Grand Doozy here in Denver. It was like a 3-day music festival. Saw Kendrick Lamar, Stevie Wonder, Florence and the Machine, De La Soul was there, bands like Phoenix, Saint Vincent, the Chainsmokers. It was good. It was a good festival. The first of its kind here in the Denver city limits and stuff, so I'd definitely go back to the next one.
That's quite a lineup. That's amazing. 3 days and... Man, what do tickets run you normally, or is this I don't know if you want to feel like sharing that, but mean, whatever. How much it cost you?
3-day pass was over $200, after fees and everything like that and stuff. So it got up there, but you know, it was 8 to 10 hours a day for 3 days. I wish I would have got there earlier on most of the days and stuff, but I was getting there about 4 or 5 o'clock each time, and I went till like 10. But it was interesting, the neighborhood. It was at a golf course and stuff, so like the landscape's all really nice. Everyone's like not littering because the green is all nice, and everywhere you sit down, it feels amazing. Like, it was kind of cool. At first, I was skeptical, and I'm like, man, a golf course is actually a really nice part for a festival. It's probably like where you like the practice greens and stuff, so it was really basically flat. It wasn't too much topography.
Yeah, I was surprised when you told me it was at a golf course. I'm like, what golf course is going to let a bunch of people just like stomp all over their fairways and shit? Like, it seemed like something that no golf course, even if they were being paid a lot of money, I would imagine that they'd be worried about the damage to the course just by virtue of people walking on it. But that makes more sense.
Maybe it has something to do with the time of year too. Towards the end of the summer, it wasn't peak, but yeah, I don't think it was on the main, like, you know, course too as well. Like, it was a big park. It's called Overland Park, so they probably just had some extra space. But the neighborhood was not prepared for it. Like, the first day, there's just like thousands of people roaming through this neighborhood across from the golf course, not knowing where to go next, trying to go down to Evans to Broadway. And like, the people were coming out on the front yards like, what the hell's going on? And by the second day, they had barricades stopping people from like wandering into the neighborhoods and directing them to like public transit and where to get a lift and stuff. And because there's no parking infrastructure for it, so it was definitely a trial and error thing. But by the very next day, they had everything taken care of as far as that went. So you know, they definitely reacted really fast, which is, you know, a sign of a good promoter. First time you do something somewhere, you're always going to make some mistakes, especially with crowd management and a new type of venue. You know, there's always going to be something that you have to find.
Man, it was that. I mean, that sounds like an awesome lineup and awesome. $200 for 3 days. I mean, that's, you know, average it out, $70 a day for 8 hours of entertainment. I mean, that overall, that's still pretty decent, even though you just got to be prepared to commit to 3 days. That's all.
So this is why I think it actually wasn't that bad. There are two reasons. They did a great job with all the vendors. They had like really nice restaurants, really good food trucks, all sorts of just great food options. There was like 3 different types of pizza places, multiple types of burger places and taco places. Like, they really represented a lot of different local restaurants. So it was arguably better like lineup of food than the freaking Taste of Colorado, because I feel like they just have the same restaurants every year, and like the restaurant scene in Denver has just gotten out of control. So the Taste of Colorado has just been disappointing, so I don't like it that much. But this music festival, there was so much good food. Like, they had some, like, Wagyu beef sliders, and when I had them, they were just, they were butter. Then there was this, from this place called STK, which is, like, a almost $70 a person, like, steak place that they just, like, opened up here recently, and they had a, they were selling sliders of, like, really high-end beef. So I had to get some with, like, truffle chips. Like, come on, man. Like, yeah. This music festival, like, you were not roughing it by any means. They had, like, you could go try different spirits, and they'd have, like, flights of, like, whiskeys and scotches and, like, tequilas and vodkas to try and rums. And I'm like, man, this is not like the festivals I grew up going to. This is freaking awesome. And they didn't sell a lot of tickets. I don't know if it was advertising or what. You know, it was probably, like, at 60% capacity for a fan's point of view. That's like you, there's enough people that the crowd's always like, you know, there's a big enough crowd to have a good time, but it's really easy to get everywhere and the lines weren't that bad. So, all in all, I had a great experience. I thought it was chilling with it ending at 10 o'clock, you know, and not having to eat bad food. You get to eat food the whole time and it's really good. Like, you know, no long lines. All the acts were really good. And then it ended at 10. So for this old man, I was able to do 3 days, no problem.
You had to pace yourself. Get to bed early.
Not like when we go to Electric Daisy Carnival in the desert and it's like an endurance. And it's like until 6 a.m. each day and pool parties in between during the day, man. That is a freaking marathon. This was like, I was in bed by midnight most nights. It was chill.
Yeah, I was just comparing it to like the festivals we used to go to when we were younger, where you only ate food to just soak up the beer. You didn't really care what it tasted like.
Nope, it didn't matter. It was all awesome. Yeah. A bad slice of pizza or a bad hot dog, whatever. It was
just
perfect.
It was just, yeah, but it was there to soak up beer. It was really,
yeah.
And, you're on a hill the whole time. Nobody in terms of the restaurants or the vendors really give a shit about you. They're just trying to move as many people as they can in and out and sell them their, whatever they're selling. And yeah. The music goes on as late as it wants to go. And yeah, we usually didn't get home till like 1 a.m. and was exhausted and everything. So, and yeah, but we didn't spend $200 on those concerts. So totally different.
when we had to spend like 60, 70 bucks for Metallica tickets, we were like, man, this is getting insane. You know, like concert tickets shouldn't cost this much.
Yeah, I can't beat that weekend, but 2 weekends ago, since we haven't recorded in, I think, 2 weeks, I did go to, again, totally, we're just totally becoming old men. I went to the Game of Thrones Experience concert, which is basically the Game of Thrones music, it's a symphony.
That's awesome.
At Key Arena. One, I love the show. Two, I love the music. I love that style of music, and you know, tickets weren't actually that bad, so I bought a really, really good ticket, like very close. Not on the floor, but I didn't really want to be on the floor. So I was like basically in the 10th row, right to the left of the stage at a Key Arena, which is a smaller, it's not that small, like basketball hockey arena. And they had some effects. They had all the classic, you know, the music from the show that recognized you. And then they had the big screens behind the orchestra showing scenes from the show. And like showing cool. All sorts of stuff, and then they had people on stage in costumes. They had the chorus in costumes, dressed up like maesters and everything. And then this one, one of the scenes, they're doing the music for Winterfell, the Northern City. And there's a tree there in the Northern City in the show, and it has these red leaves. So they had this, they had their violin player slowly elevate on this platform. In this giant dress. So I made it look like she was, you know, 13 feet tall and 10 feet of it's just dress. And as she's doing it, all these little red flakes start coming down from the ceiling to simulate the red leaves coming off the tree. And it's like, and then the background, they're showing the tree. I mean, like they're trying to create the mood of the show.
Did they do a good job? Like not going full cheesy, you know, or full production, but just like the subtlety.
They did a good job because they're not trying to blow you away with lasers and pyrotechnics, because they can't do that, and that doesn't really fit with the show except for fire. They did have fire machines for whenever the dragon roars or breathes fire. So like that was the only real special effect they put in, and I'm glad they did it that way, because I think any other way it would have come off as just like a cheesy over the top. You know, you're paying for special effects in a orchestrated, you know, symphony type music setting. I mean, there is some lyrics, there are some spoken word songs in the show, but not that many. And I mean, it was an awesome show. It was a great time. I think that it was about, I say 2 hours. No, it was under 2 hours. I think If you include in the intermission, it was a little over 2 hours, but you know, there was like a 15-minute intermission. The bar was right behind me, my seat. So I could just like turn around out of my seat, walk up like 3 or 4 steps down through this hallway, and I'm at the bar. It was really fucking sweet. And then so that was one of my nights. That was definitely a good time. That guy they don't do that tour very often because he's busy making music for the show. Let's see, what else? I got to see more of my new hometown here in Seattle the night after, and got to check out. You didn't ask me about this, but I'm just going to go ahead and talk about it anyway. So
yes,
I don't know if any of you want to hear this. I don't care. This is my show. But we checked out this neighborhood called Ballard, which is on the northern side of Seattle, and basically it's like a brewery on every corner. It's amazing. Oh, there is like they said there's about 20 breweries in that neighborhood, and all within like a mile radius. So you can walk to all of them, and then they have just regular bars sprinkled through there, some restaurants. I mean, it is like, you know, it's like paradise. It's like a beer paradise, and it's a nice neighborhood, but it's not like upscale. You know, there's warehouses over here. It's not like gentrified at all. It's warehouses and shit. They basically repurposed warehouses into breweries or into little bars, and it's fantastic little neighborhood. We met a bunch of people there. Seattle people have a reputation for being kind of not very warm and not very outgoing, and I found that if you talk to them, they're more than happy to talk to you, and they'll be friendly. They just don't initiate very often. And they will, like, if you don't talk to them and if you kind of keep to yourself, they will keep to themselves. So no one's going to approach you. There's no, like, gregarious laughing or, you know, no one's going to try and KO you into something. Like, if you want to talk to somebody, you have to, like, make the effort. Because otherwise, most people around here, they're very happy to just chill at a bar, have a drink, watch whatever's on the game, or maybe just talk to the person next to them. And that's it. They don't need to go make friends. So I think that's kind of, like, the attitude that a lot of people have. But if you start talking to people, they'll talk to you. If you're friendly to them, they'll be friendly to you. And we were bullshitting with all sorts of people. We went to this, after the breweries, we went to this awesome steakhouse. Trying to think. Oh, yeah, Flint Creek Cattle House. There was no cattle in there. I was disappointed at that. But, great steak. And definitely spent more than I wanted to. But it was a great time. And so that was the weekend before. Last weekend I did nothing because, you know, I spent too much money the weekend before. But so that's no music. Well, yeah, I did have the concert, but I didn't have 3 days, and I didn't have Kendrick Lamar, you know, the GOAT. So
yeah, that was fantastic. He just tore it up in the beginning, man. That was just the first night, and Stevie Wonder ended it. You know, ended the 3 days and stuff. He had a huge band, and it was magical. You know, like only Stevie could do.
Nice. I did like, was it the Emmys or Grammys? He did he was up there with, it was like Pharrell Williams. It was like a whole, like, full on thing. Stevie Wonder was, like, just part of the show. And they had the two, is it Daft Punk? Two guys in the helmets?
Yes. Oh, that's fantastic.
Yeah, so they're up there, like, in their helmets, like, laying down the track. They have Pharrell Williams singing, Stevie Wonder doing a little singing and playing piano. And then Up All Night to Get Lucky, I think was the song. It was fucking badass. It was just...
Yes, Stevie Wonder helping him out with that song. Hell yeah.
So
Stevie was fantastic, man. He's still got it, man. He's 68 and still just crushing it, shredding those keys. You know, I'm sure he sung a little bit better in the 70s and 80s than he does now, but he still got it.
Still blind as a bat, too.
I'm not convinced. Felt like he was looking right at me. that was a great weekend. That was a great weekend, all in all. And freaking, I went to our sister's wedding, and on the plane ride back, I watched this amazing movie. We could talk about the wedding, but nobody knows our family, so it doesn't make a difference. What's important is what I watched on the plane ride back, and one of the worst airplane experiences of my life, because I'm stuck on the tarmac for 3 hours before we could even take off. So I watched like a whole movie, an abandoned movie like almost like three quarters of the way through. It's like, nope, I don't need to finish this. This is so bad. It's not going anywhere. And that was the Cloverfield effect or paradox or something.
Yeah, Cloverfield paradox, which, yeah,
don't,
it was disappointing.
Don't recommend it. I wanted to give it a chance. It was an indie movie. It seemed like, you know, it was going okay for an indie movie, but then it just wasn't. But, and then I watched something that I think I'd seen like a preview for or whatever, but didn't really take seriously, Upgrade. And then I told you to watch it immediately. You watched it. You loved it too. And I think that's what we're going to talk about this whole time, is this amazing movie, Upgrade. It's just, as you put it, I think, like, just make more sci-fis like that. Like, just take that.
And yeah, we could make a whole show of just ripping into Cloverfield Paradox, but we're not going to do that. We're going to talk about the awesome one.
Upgrade, they're both worth a show, you know, but I let's have a positive show.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Well,
we got some positive to talk about, so we might as well.
So what makes Upgrade really, I mean, why I was trying to think of like what, instead of just saying, yes, make more of that, which I totally stand by, I was trying to be like, well, put it into words, what in there do you want more of? And I think one of the things that's in there is that it shows a very believable and plausible near future of like maybe 10 to 20 years ahead, maybe 20 years of, you know, automated houses, automated driving, driverless cars, police drones kind of overhead at all times, kind of helping with crime and crowd control, and just in the cities, like, They look totally plausible, like with what we know and what we have right now versus what we might have in 10, 15, 20 years. Like, it's totally plausible. So it kind of gives you what science fiction is supposed to give you, a vision of the future that you just buy. And I bought this one totally.
It's definitely easy to, and you see a little bit of a separation of like the rich and the poor, which I feel like we're already seeing a little bit of now, not to make anything social about it, but just more believable stuff. Like, life is still gritty. Not everything's clean and futuristic, but there's still a bunch of clean futuristic stuff around. And I think that's how we're going to see our future develop. Like, it's going to be a long time before everybody's living in like the future. There's going to be a lot of people that are still living in like, you know, the pseudo future where they have access to some technology, but a lot of their basic stuff around them is still, you know, decades and decades behind, like the cities, the streets, the infrastructure and just their resources.
Absolutely. All of that is just, I guess maybe movie makers or not movie makers, production houses, and they just don't think science fiction fans or maybe spec fans want that. They just think explosions, laser fights, laser swords, and fantasy is like what drives. They don't bother with in this other direction of something that's much more higher on the plausibility scale and much more on the realistic scale, and also not 500 years in the future, more like 10 or 20 years, where it's still, it's recognizable, and even the technologies that are kind of made up, you see them, like, you look at it, you're like, yeah, I could see that being developed in the next 10, 20 years. Like, I totally buy it. Like, you buy this future, and you also buy the people in it with the people that have totally, that are on the top, you know, living in these ridiculously future modernist houses and these automated houses. And then this main character, this dude Gray, who is, you know, not really a Luddite, but he's not interested in getting all, automated and everything. He works on classic muscle cars. So,
you know, awesome for the audience, because yes. who like everyone of this generation still is like a bit inspired by an old school muscle car. It's so cool. It's cool to see in a movie. And it's definitely during a time like in the near future where that is still going to, like, you could still see that on the streets next to like automated cars. And I feel like that's going to be like that for like the next 50 or more years until, like, you know, you just aren't allowed to have gasoline cars the road.
They're like luxury. Yeah, they're luxury items or collectibles, like, because that's what he does. He restores them for rich people that want to keep one as a collector's item. So that's his job. That's his only job, basically restoring cars for rich people. And so he's not really a full time. But what I really loved about that is it's not his dialogue and his attitude with his wife, like early in the movie and even in the middle of the movie, is he's not preachy. It's not like the movie's lecturing you that this guy hates technology. Like, mm-hmm. you get the impression he's not comfortable with it and he prefers not to, but he's not bitching and complaining. They don't spoon feed to you that he is, you know, anti-tech. Like, you get the impression, you know, without a whole lot of help. And I love that.
He's kind of chill about it, yes, you know? Like, exactly. He says a couple things, but he's not, like, a one-dimensional character where it's, like, part of his, like, you know, personality is, like, constantly ranting about the conspiracies around tech or whatever. It's just, like, a slight aversion, and he's a little bit of a dying breed, and that's it. But he's not one-dimensional that way. What's great, I mean, it hits me in the feels because right in the beginning of the movie, I'll at least say the beginning of it, you know, like he gets attacked with his wife, and his wife gets murdered, and he loses his freaking ability to walk. He gets paralyzed and everything. And it's like, I'm like, you know, flying with my fiance, and it's just like hitting me in the feels right there. It's like, oh my God, his wife was just murdered in front of him. Like, it was intense. It was dark. It wasn't like, you know, it wasn't too drawn out and too like artsy about it and stuff, but it definitely was like a serious scene and a dark, like borderline dystopian future. I guess it wasn't, no, dystopian's not the right term, but just like a grittier version of like the future. And it was definitely rough. And then of course, you know, he's avenging her death, and he gets, one of his clients was like some big tech guru, like some young savant Steve Jobs type person, or like that guy that's running Ethereum, that weird Bitcoin type company. Mm-hmm. I just kind of had that weird tech genius thing and just this awesome, ominous feel like already off the bat, even though it was a little bit cheesy, it's still like really awesome. Like he was like a believable, like bad with people savant, you know, and he's all like, well, I can make you walk again. And he puts his chip in him so he can walk, but it's some like new insane technology and artificial intelligence that lets his brain communicate with the rest of his body and bridges the break in the spinal cord, and it turns out it's like, you know, sentient and talks back to him, and then they go on a crazy awesome like vengeance mission to avenge his wife's murderer. I mean, what's more awesome than that?
You're absolutely, and like that's what it plays off in the trailer, and even like in the blurb I read about that this is kind of like man on fire, man apart. Like, you know, Vin Diesel's done some of these movies where his wife or loved one is murdered, and it's just basically a revenge movie. And that's really what like the hook, like in addition to the tech thing put in his neck, it's kind of a revenge hook, but it doesn't play out the way that these other movies do, where it's the revenger like having these ultimate badass moments and the satisfaction of dispensing justice. Like Gray is not, he does want like revenge, but he's not like a violent man. Like he does like at some points like does want to hurt them, but other times when actually at this point we should probably just go ahead and say we will start spoiling this movie. We will not spoil the. I think we'll hold to this. We will not spoil the ending. We'll try to stay away from that.
Yeah, we definitely will. But I mean, it's. I mean, the character's awesome, and it's not like you said. It's not one dimensional. You know, he's not crazy, bloodthirsty, like blind vengeance or whatever. At a certain point, like the AI is almost leading him on this mission, and you start getting suspicious about all the events around it, his wife's death, and everything. And it comes like a cool little like whodunit mystery, along with the action, along with the sci-fi. You know, along with the vengeance, like it checks a lot of boxes for just like an all around really good movie, you know. And then the bad guys are freaking awesome because they have these cool upgrades and everything as well, too. Guns and they're freaking built into them and stuff, like, you know, not over the top cheesy, still very plausible, like future tech if people start getting implants, you know. And we are going to live in a future of like two things are going to happen probably in our lifetime. There's going to be controversial like genetic engineering in some way, shape or form. That's going to, you know, choose us in the future, whether it's like selective breeding or something, I don't know. And we're also, people are going to start getting like more advanced implants and everything. Like we will see this in our lifetime. It's going to be the big moral dilemma of humanity of our lifetime. Like maybe towards the end when me and you are old men and we'll just sit back and watch this. We'll be like his character. We've never got any crazy implants or anything.
You're absolutely right. Like the weapons, like the kind of upgrades that the other characters have, the other kind of the hitmen and whatever, they're badass, but they're not like crazy. Like they're not like, wow. That, I mean, like I remember you mentioned, we were talking Infinity War, Tony Stark's new nano suit that just kind of appears over his body. And you were just like, you know what? The Iron Man suit was so cool because it was mechanical and semi-plausible. And now you're just making this thing magically appear over his body that was totally not necessary. And I agree the same way. You don't need to keep reaching for these like magical technologies. And I think in this movie, they keep the technologies like within 20 to 30 years. They're not magical. I mean, there is one moment in the bar, and I won't get into the details, but there is a moment towards the end of the movie where I thought, all right, I could see that as a possibility, but that one stretched a little bit. But like 99% of the stuff you see in this movie, you're like, holy shit, I could see that in my lifetime. And including the weapons.
That adds to the action, you know, that you do, like the just the suspense that you actually feel, the realism of it and everything, where you could be absurd. You come up with these rules and these ideas, but then you also stay within them, you know, so you could get sucked into this universe. And that's definitely my problem with a lot of sci-fi. And they think maybe it's like an intense moment when you just have this technology or this thing that's so over the top, but it's like, that's a big deal for children. I feel like if you're trying to appeal to like, you know, moderate young adults to adults, you need to add a little bit more. Now I do a little bit more realism, but I do have some friends that are just children for the rest of their lives. They love anime, they love other stuff, and I'll watch like a weird sci-fi fantasy with them, and if I was watching it with you, we would hate the movie, we would never finish it. And I watch it with them and they're like, oh my god, that was so awesome, that was so good. And it's like, man, it's sometimes in movie terms I feel like you're still 13 because of some of the things that you like, the video games and the anime and other stuff like that. Like, you're still easily entertained or whatever and stuff. Like, if I watched that with a kid, I'd be like, wow, that was cool. But we're adults, we're peers. And like, you were entertained by that. That was bad.
Yeah, sir. I agree entirely with, especially with, I watched a little bit of anime. I started off with Adult Swim used to have this animation night on Saturdays. And all these, like, Cowboy Bebop, Ghost in the Shell, Standalone Complex. I can't remember the names of the other four or five I watched. But then there was a few of them that had, like, mechs. There's a few that had just, you know, Alchemy, Full Metal Alchemist, which is... Mm-hmm. And everyone told me, these things are amazing. You got to watch them. And I would watch them. I'm like, this is just straight fantasy. This is straight, like... Yes, there's... And it's just a totally made up world. There's nothing about it that has any relation to the real world. But it's like total escapism, like you were saying. Like, for younger kids, that's for younger. They totally love that. They love total escapism. I don't. I don't need full escape. Like, partial escape is acceptable. I don't need to be thrown into something. And maybe that's where you and I are a little bit different than a lot of others. Is that you? I don't necessarily need to be fully immersed in an entirely magical, non-realistic setting. Like, you can have some rules and you can have some reality to it. And I think, like, when I watch Full Metal Alchemy or some of these others, I get frustrated because I'm like, yes, I'm seeing some cool things visually, but I don't believe the world. I don't buy into the world behind it. I know it's not real because it looks like there's parts of it that just seem like bullshit to me.
No, and there's like a lack of consistency with stuff, and they don't necessarily need that. There's a super one-dimensionalness to their characters, let alone the two-dimensional animation that is also like not 30 frames per second by any means. Like, all of those things about the style, I get that whole Magna, like, you know, anime style people tend to like, but after a certain point, it's like, how many decades do you keep doing that exact animation style and not one-upping it? There are some, though, that are beautifully animated, so I can't say all of them are like that. But some of the classics or some of the favorites, it doesn't even matter about the animation quality, and they say it's all about the story and all this other stuff, and I still can't find my way to get sucked into it. So for any fans out there, you know, we're definitely our own niche. We'd like to think we're open-minded to a lot of things, but anime and magic fantasy stuff is just a little bit hard of a pill for us to swallow both. We don't completely hate both genres, but if you're a fan of them, we probably can't talk too much about it.
I won't delve too. I do like the lower key stuff. I like the Death Note, which is I've only seen a few episodes, but I was entertained by it because it's like this. I mean, the premise is ridiculous.
But I don't know what that is. Is that a cartoon? Or?
It's a cartoon where this teenager comes across this notebook. And he's visited by this being, and basically, whatever name he writes in the book, that person will die in the manner he describes. So he's given this power of life and death over people, and he has to decide what to do with it. But he also doesn't want people to know that he has this ability, or so he can't, you know, be. So it's it's kind of the moral quandaries that he runs into. Like, should he just kill bad people? But then the consequences of killing people, like, it doesn't always end up the way he thinks it will. Like, mm-hmm. it sometimes begets more violence. And then, of course, the god, the death god himself, is this really just freaky-looking, clown-looking dude that loves apples. And
is that a biblical thing? Like,
I don't know. I think it's a Japanese death god. I think it's
so
that's what I think he's supposed to be. And he kind of like gives the notebook to one human at a time, and he says, "This is yours. Do with it what you will, and I will make it happen because that's what I do." And he kind of like wants to see what, you know, he thinks of it as fun because this is his job. But he also likes to taunt the person.
Total experiment. Like, what is he going to do? He'll try to do good, but it's not good. It's not a good power to have. It's going to, like, rot you or make you evil or something. Or like, oh, that's fantastic.
Like in the movie.
Now, the one thing I will say about animes is that they do have a lot of cool, unique concepts. And I think some of people's favorites are ones I can't get into, but there's a lot of side ones I've been briefly introduced to that I think are really cool concepts. There are some ones that have sci-fi that aren't too over the top. Blue Gender was an older one that was really good. I felt like it was like these weird beings had taken over like these giant dinosaur type weird bug things, but they eat like inanimate objects too. So not only did they destroy the world, but they do that and like, you know, still multiply and evolve. And people either live on this space station floating around Earth, figuring out how to get rid of them, or they just discover that some people did survive on Earth. And it was just kind of nuts. Yeah. Yeah, Blue Gender was – I never got to finish it, but I got really, like, sucked into it. And I was like, all right, if you like presenting these, like, complex sci-fi ideas in a really, like, completely new pattern and everything, and, like, animation is one of the best ways to do it on a lower budget, even though it's still expensive, you know, just for any special effects or any visuals or space stuff. I was like, that was opening my mind to that. So as, you know, anime fans are listening and they're probably cringing, saying, hey, there's a lot of stuff you would like if you gave it a chance – it really has to be stuff with concepts that are just based in a little bit of fact for us, because there could still be great storytelling that just happens to be animated. Like, I'm game. And especially, yeah. Like, a lot of the, you know, Japanese and Koreans, like, takes on, like, on concepts and ideas or whatever. We've been stealing a lot of them for the past few decades and recycling them as our own original ideas.
For sure. We don't convert them into TV shows or movies that well. Netflix has tried with several of these and not been successful. And the one Death Note got made into a movie on Netflix, and Willem Dafoe was the death god. I was totally sold on that. I'm like, I want to watch this. I watched it. I was horribly disappointed. They did not put nearly enough time into writing it. They did have a lot of like the themes of it, you know, the be careful what you wish for, but they just some of it was just so sloppy, the writing, and Willem Dafoe was underused, and you know, Willem Dafoe is a death god. Come on. Somebody tells you there's a movie where Willem Dafoe is a Japanese death god, like, come on, man, that should be a winner there. What the fuck?
Like, isn't it kind of weird he's just playing himself again?
Like, you know,
like, he's not just a death god. We all know William Dafoe is the Japanese death god.
Well, you know, when his voice, like, when his voice comes out of the character you see, you're like, that voice fits with what he looks like. He's got, like, all these, like, you'll have to look it up before. I don't want to describe it. He's not really a clown. He has a pale face and kind of some colored eyes, so it does look a little clownish, but the rest of his body looks just like it's all black, and it has all these spines coming out and spindles, and it's just, and his eyes are glowing this weird ass color. It's fucked up. And then to hear Willem Dafoe's voice come out of it, you're like, yep, that's I buy that. I buy that god character in a second. Unfortunately, the movie is shit, and I'm not the only one. I'm sure the fans of Death Note were horribly disappointed. And the other movie I'll mention really quick, and then maybe we should finish off on this anime tangent, is Ghost in the Shell, which I like the show. I've seen about 20 or 30 episodes of the show, so there's obviously a lot of it I have not seen, and I've never read the comic books. But it's a cool-ass show. It's very thoughtful. It's very methodical. It's actually a lot more low-key than it looks like on the outside. Like, it is like kind of a militaristic kind of spy angle to it, but it's very much about AI, about what is consciousness, what is humanity, and He doesn't shy away about things like gender, for example, like when you can switch bodies the way you can, like in some of these ways, like you stop caring about gender or stop caring about whatever. And then, of course, there's the other side, the sex robots, because that's, you know, that's another thing we already know is going to happen. But like it's very much about like also just linking with other people consciously, like not just playing games with them online, but being able to interact with them like on a much more advanced level through networks and things like that, and also being able to share bodies. So all this stuff, I mean, it's like 2060, you know, 2075 kind of year. And but it's just, it's not like trying to like blow you away with a bunch of visuals. It's like trying to make you think. And it's a lot more technical, and I appreciated it. Unfortunately, the movie, they decided to whitewash it, and they got Scarlett Johansson to be the major, Makoto. Totally unnecessary. She did all right, but like you totally did not need Scarlett Johansson for that movie. And
she should have turned down the role.
She should have turned down the role. I mean, it's supposed to be a Japanese woman. I don't know why you cannot find an awesome, badass Japanese actress to play that role. Like, that should not be that hard. But anyway, I think that's why anime has, like, it could have a wider audience if, like, the TV shows and the movies, like, the live action, were not total junk. I think a lot of people turn away, and I do too. I really am. Some of the cartoons are crazy and totally, like, obnoxious. And their movies and the live action movies are terrible, and I think that really kind of turns me off to a lot of it. When there is some gem, there's definitely some gems in there. I mean, there's definitely some very creative and very imaginative, some wonderful stuff. But unfortunately, there's just a lot of garbage in that genre. I'm sorry. Maybe garbage is not the right word, but I don't know. Like just
Stuff
unappealing.
Stuff that's just not for us, you know, not like what we're going to be entertained by, not the type of storytelling that we necessarily like and get in, you know, pulled into by, because once there's just like some random thing that I know the author could just make up out of nowhere that solves everything, like the suspense is gone for me. You know, the getting emotionally invested is gone for me. And I feel like it's almost lazy, you know, for the storyteller and for the writer. And I know it's just part of the genre and you're not supposed to blame them, because in so many other ways they could be great writers and great storytellers. But I feel like using those tools like they do in fantasy and a lot of times in anime too, when it's too much, you know, fantastical, you know, just whether it's a weird spell or a weird thing that none of the audience has ever heard of until this exact moment when it just happens to be the perfect and only thing to get them out of it. And then I'm supposed to feel suspense the next time they're in trouble, even though it seems like it's impending doom. It's like, oh no, they're going to write their way out of this. And even though you always know that's kind of going to happen because you're not prepared for all the main characters to be killed, it doesn't seem like that's going to ever happen, you know, like maybe a person or two, but usually, you know, the main characters are going to keep on going on. Mm-hmm. But still, like when things like that are the ones that constantly save them, some just very specific thing that you've never heard about before, or it was foretold in a really cheesy way, like the foreshadowing was really cheesy and you're like, oh, that's gonna save everyone. And I don't know, that just is hard for me. And for other people, I think they could appreciate a lot of the other aspects of the character building and of the world building and everything, that they just get lost in that aspect, and those little plot details don't bother them as much as they bother me.
Yeah, for sure. And I think when I've heard, I don't want to like put too much of this, because this is only a few examples of this, but some of these really just feel like they're adolescent male fantasies. You know, some kid stumbles across this incredible power and he has to, and it's basically kind of this, you know, just world-changing thing where he can, like, he just needs to go about reshaping the world the way he wants and getting the things he wants and undoing all these injustices that were done to him and his family, and then he gets the girl, of course, and like it's all kind of laid out for, you know, this kind of hero's journey for an adolescent male who, you know, wants more and desires more. And these kind of shows are a way of laying that out, because I mean a lot of them just start off with an adolescent male, you know, hero. Like that's what it is for a fair amount of these, or, you know, someone who looks like it or acts like it. I mean, that's the other thing. A lot of them do just act like giant children, And it's hard to take these, you know, samurai warriors, or, you know, sometimes they just look like samurai. I mean, no, they're not samurai. They just look like it. They're carrying massive handheld weapons, or they just look kind of, you know, courtly, and as they're knights almost. But they act like children, and it's just, it's hard to take it seriously, and hard to really see too much to talk about in that kind of movie. And what really, and I think maybe all of this is to say, like, on the American side and on the real life side, like, we have plenty of movies that are like revenge movies. You know, they John Wick starts off that way, but John Wick is stylized and
Payback,
and yeah, Payback. And to him, it's basically, it's not his wife, it's the dog that his wife got him before she passed away of a disease, and she, and he just fucking loses it, and he's like just a monster going after the mob. So, but people just, I mean, the gun violence and everything, it's a revenge story. So some of them do very well, but there's really not much there. You know, basically the premise of the movie is the guy goes on a rampage because somebody kills his dog. Now, for some people, that's an amazing, because if somebody killed their dog, they would go on a rampage and fucking burn someone's house down. But
I think they striked a different chord there. I think they got a cross-gender audience, you know? Like, that was a smart move.
Yeah, I mean, he's a guy that's trying to retire, you know, he's trying to move on with his life, and this happens to him because some little punk kid. But, like, this Upgrade movie, like, it's different. Like, he wants to find out who killed his wife, but he's not really a killer. He doesn't have it. Like, in the first encounter with one of the people that attack them, like, after he kills him, like, he pukes in the kitchen sink.
Well, because it's pretty much it's Stem that kills him and stuff.
And which we should explain who Stem is. Like, yeah, we haven't said Stem
is like the chip that starts talking to him. And when he tells the tech guy that put him in there, it's all like, dude, this thing talks to me. He's almost like, it talks to you? He didn't know that was going to happen. Like,
I didn't know it like, could at do least, that.
Yeah, like, like, you might have known it was AI and this and that, but it's like, dude, you could hear it in your head. I mean, it wasn't that, like, childish of an, you know, because he was just, like, a stoic genius, but you still, like, saw him almost break a little bit, like, being surprised, even though he seemed like a genius that was surprised by nothing. So it was definitely, there's another part of it that's intriguing you. So it's like there's multiple things that are kind of intriguing you. What's going on with Stem? Why is Stem even down for, like, some of this or whatever? And it's all like, what, are you just my buddy now? And you just, like, help me in, like, my missions? You know, like, what's Stem's agenda?
Yeah, like,
it just really unfolds into something, like, really, really awesome and interesting and fun and just, like, their version of the future. I'd love to see it, like, just keep on going down. And it definitely was, it had a little bit of a cyberpunk feel or whatever with the cinematography was really pretty breathtaking. The action sequences weren't too over the top, and like they had good sound design and everything. It felt realistic, and it was a good balance for a sci-fi. And I feel like I rarely come across a sci-fi where I feel like all around, like, it was a good leap balance movie. Like, sometimes it's like, cool, I really like how it made me think, but maybe like the acting was stale, you know, but that was maybe still true to it and stuff. Like, this kind of like hit the middle of everything that makes a great movie and a great sci-fi for me.
And it's not,
that's just kind of rare, you know, to just,
and it's not what you expect. That's what I loved about it. Like, you would think, like, the first thing I thought was this is going to be like a Vin Diesel, Denzel Washington, Bruce Willis kind of revenge movie. And you realize that Stem seems to be the one that, like, when he's sitting there and he doesn't know what to do next, and Stem is like, pick up the knife. Like, what do you mean? It's like, if he gets back up, he's going to kill you. You need to, like, like, Stem is like the evil voice in his ear sometimes. Mm-hmm. And, like, as it goes on, like, at first you think he's going to drive the revenge and he's going to drive the bloodshed, but he really, yes, he wants revenge, but he's not the one that has the plan. And he needs help. And Stem, who not only allows him to walk after being paralyzed, Stem can take over his body and do all sorts of these incredibly, you know, nifty things. And he just sits back and lets it happen, you know. And he's like, "Yeah, Stem, you can take over." And Stem just fucking beats the shit out of people.
And you're gonna have to let me take over, or else I can't help you.
I love it.
It's just a really cool, and it's a really cool sequence because he just like kicks ass in kind of a robotic way, and like you see his face look back, like holy shit, what's happening? Like the actor does a good job of like executing the action sequences, but having like a look on his face, like he doesn't know what he's gonna do next.
Like he's not doing it. Like the one of the first fight scenes where he's just for the first time seeing what STEM can do, and he just sees this guy get the fuck beat out of him with his own arms and legs, and he's just, dude, stay down, man. Just stay down. Please stay down, dude. Please. He gets back up, and he just continues to wail on him, but, like, he's not doing it. STEM is. So he's just like a innocent bystander watching this dude get his just destroyed. He's like, he's just blown away. He's like, I didn't know that STEM could do this. I didn't know I could do this. And he's like, dude, just stay down, dude. Just please stay down. Like, he's just
there's a great humor aspect to it. He's got kind of a dark sense of humor. He's a dark, depressed guy. Kind of doesn't give a fuck when he's on this rampage. Doesn't really care that he dies because he was already accepted being paralyzed and losing his wife. Like, so he's got a weird darkness to him, but he could still get snapped into reality and been like, holy shit, I don't know about all this. Like, it's great.
It does. Yeah, absolutely. Those moments where, like, he's like, you think, like, he's along for the ride and he's having those smart-ass one-liners, but then, like, he gets snapped to reality. He's like, okay, this is getting a little too real, all right?
It was great. I don't know how much more we could talk about this movie before being pointless somebody seeing it, but I do want to just keep talking to you about it.
Well, I'm trying really hard not to give away the last third of the movie. Like, I'm okay with the beginning and maybe a few things here and there. I definitely am not going to spoil the ending. So, yeah. But I will.
I mean, the ending makes you want to, like, I'll at least say with the ending, like, it could either just wrap up the whole movie and they never make another, or they could totally lead into another. Like, it doesn't have to be there's another movie. It could totally just, like, leave, like, on a really cool note like it does.
You'd
be like, if they want it, it could lead, like, really cleanly into, like, a 2 and 3 that you just, like, with a lot of development and story and character.
And it does, like, it has the feel of, like, a shorter science fiction work where science fiction sometimes ends with, you know, not really the way a story should end. You know, it's like it's showing you an alternate world and trying to explore something. So sometimes the ending is not satatisfying because it's not trying to do like a cookie cutter beginning, middle, end like kind of thing. And that's what I love about this movie.
Yeah, it's trying to make you think and just like it's almost like a punchline. They can end with a punchline. It's like a twist that never really has to, or like a cliffhanger that never really has to be resolved. You know, and I think that's cool. So, like, at the end of it, like, I was just, like, I was really happy. And it's, like, and, you know, Jesse, we were on the plane for so long, and it sucked. And it's, like, she was watching, like, the book club or something. Like, and, like, I was really pumped about my movie, and I couldn't be that excited, even though I was all, like, I really liked what I just watched. It was awesome. And then if I explained it, she'd be like, oh, that sounds great. Like, it was not a fun flight experience.
Like the... I bet. Like,
I just saw the coolest movie ever, babe, and now I want to talk about it. No. Well, let's just kick it.
Yeah, that was great, man. That was an awesome movie. Like, how was your movie? It's terrible. Oh, cool. So, how about this delay? Yeah.
Yeah.
Let's get going.
it was kind of one of those, you know. But
I love. What about the bar? I have some feelings about the bar in the middle of the movie because we see like the futuristic home, we see the futuristic this and that, and then we see this bar which has a totally different feel because like its attitude is. Yeah, you can't be wired up in here. We have no Wi-Fi. We have nothing. You just walk in and drink. And
so, what was cool about that is that even though they talked about it, none of the databases can find it. And that even included, like, you know, not just like Google Maps or something, but like crime databases or whatever, like even STEM's databases or something. Like, nobody could really find it. And it was something that only like the character knew from growing up in the neighborhood and stuff. And that was kind of interesting because you think this future where everything is so big brother, especially with drones flying around and all this other stuff, but there's still some ways things could be off the grid and only locals could really know about it. And whether that's believable or not, who knows? Like, I mean, I definitely feel like still in this day and age, there's like when I used to throw underground shows and underground parties, there's stuff that everybody didn't know about it unless you were in the know and you knew the neighborhood or like the scene. And so it's like, I feel like that'll still be possible in the future to a certain degree, especially, you know, it had a huge touch of criminal underworld in it. But the appeal of a place that's off the grid or whatever in a place that's normally so, you know, lit up and so highly tracked is probably going to be relevant.
Dude, just imagine this, dude. If somebody did this as a theme today, like there's a bar or a place somewhere, you go in, you cannot bring your phone in. You have to leave it in your car or like you have to turn it off or whatever. It has like dampeners, like it basically like hotels the way they totally sap your cell signal or Wi-Fi signal. Like all of that. The whole point of this place is when you go in there, there is no electronic connection to anything. Like when you go in there, you're just there to drink, watch sports, whatever. Like that in the future, especially when you have people like the main character and they just want to get away from that shit. Like this bar like embodied that and they were able to wrap it into the movie without them beating you over the head with it. Like,
yeah,
and
that's what I loved about it. Yeah, like, it definitely
stems a lot like, of the, yeah, like stems like there's all these references to this place called Bones. I can't find it. And then all of a sudden like, oh, I know that place. It's like, well, it's not on my records. Yeah. They don't go in for that. I know where it is though. Like, it's just like, that's how they throw it in. Like, it's not like in your face, like, oh yeah, they're anti-technology and we're just going to lecture you about this shit. Like, no, it was like, it was seamless. It was fucking good.
And then, yeah, and you just start building those concepts in your mind as the other things are going on. Yeah, you didn't spoon feed the audience, even though it wasn't like trying too hard to be smart. No. That's a nice balance. That's like, there's just not a lot of movies that are just balanced all around like that, you know? Like, because there's some movies that I love, but they're freaking like kind of mind benders and a little bit fucking, you know, trying too hard to be hard to get. But this one, like, was not spoon-feeding the audience, like, the plot and everything, and still not something that was too complicated to get.
Absolutely. And the AI, which, I mean, the AI is not really the greatest part of this movie, but I did enjoy the points where STEM couldn't help him, and he had to do it. And I love those parts, too. I wish they actually had a little bit more of that than they did, but there was points where STEM is like, do something, Gray. Like in one scene, like STEM flat out says, like, I have no tactical alternative here. You must do something. Like basically, the AI is admitting he can't help. Like you're gonna have to find a way out of this one. I love it. Like I love those scenes. I wish there was a little bit more of that balance between what STEM can and can't do. But there was just enough of it where you're like, wow. Like this movie is showing you, like, yes, this AI can do things with his body and kind of is making him superhuman, but it has limitations.
Limitations of the technology for the most part, you know, like the believability of it, like it's still new AI and it's scary. it's super awesome. Like, you want Skynet? This is how you get Skynet. <No. laughs> Oh, man.
So I think, if I had to grade, I mean, I recommend this to everyone who loves science fiction. It is violent, but it's not, it is rated R and it does have violence, but it's not gratuitous. Like, it does, I think it balances what it's trying to accomplish with what, you know, not feeding bloodlust. Like I said.
You got humor, you got violence, you got like heart and like emotion in it and stuff too. You got a really intelligent sci-fi, like, you know, vision of the near future and just really fun cinematography that just feels realistic. So like, yes. you really get sucked into the movie. Like, it's just well done all around. It's also a really pretty, like, gritty movie.
Yeah, I love it. You won't recognize any of the cast, but they all did.
I think the one I recognized was the genius. Who is he?
He is.
Well, I recognize him.
Yes, he's been in a few things. Harrison Gilbertson is his name. He has like a pretty long history on TV and a few movies. Benedict Hardy, the main villain or the main hitman. Like, he's been in a few movies. You might have recognized him. But actually, the main character, Logan Marshall Green, who plays Gray, he was in the movie Prometheus.
Oh.
And he was one of the key players in that movie. So he's done some major sci-fi before, and he's been
no shit.
And he's been on TV a lot too. I mean, a lot of these are actors and actresses that have plenty of experience, but just not in high big budget movies.
You know what's weird is freaking the main guy almost reminded me a little bit of Tom Hardy.
Yes.
And then when I saw the credits and I saw there was another actor named Hardy, I was like, I knew it. It's like his brother or cousin. And then I looked it up and it's like, it's not. What the fuck? I was disappointed as fuck, man. Because like it even rolled in the credits, the last name Hardy is someone. And I was like, I fucking knew it.
As one of the Hardy boys.
That's one of the Hardy boys.
And the writer and the director is Lee Whannell. I think that's how you say the name. And I was curious about him because I'd never heard of him. He's an Australian actor, right?
It's Whannell. It's Whannell.
Lee Whannell.
Lee Whannell.
I'm Lee Whannell. Well, he's Australian, so I'm Lee Whannell. But he's known for his directing and acting roles in horror movies like Saw and Insidious. So he moved from horror into science fiction, and this is what he made. And I am just really impressed that somebody who most the other movie I wanted to tell you about that he directed was is he the director? No, I'm sorry. He starred in Levantula, basically lava spewing tarantulas.
What?
Yes.
Where?
He did that. he was an actor in it. He didn't direct it. He was an actor, but he was in that TV movie. For sci-fi, Lava Lantula. So this is where this dude comes from. He's kind of like Peter Jackson, where he comes from this background of making these cheesy horror movies, and he moves into something real. This is his baby, and it's fantastic. It's Upgrade is awesome. Never would have thought a dude who did those other horror movies could do something like this. This is like really impressive.
Yeah, it is all around. And I really hope this franchise or this turns into a franchise or like just this team is able to do more stuff, whether it's the right, you know, directing writing team or the right, you know, executive producer with the rest of the team. I'm not really sure, but I'd like to see more of this whole storyline and universe. This guy could do more. It'll be nuts.
Yes.
It'll be nuts. Once you see how it ends or whatever, you think they wrap it up in a nice, neat bow, but you're all like, but what if? You know, like they could totally just lead right into another movie and like a whole new, like, freaking layer of this shit. Like, shit just got real.
I just love that every single, like, minor plausibility or suspension of disbelief issue I had with this movie. Like, it was only one or two minor ones. Not enough for me to really have a problem with this movie. Both of them were explained in the end. So at the end of the movie, I'm like, every like, kind of objection or everything that I thought was weak in the movie, he, like, hits at the end.
Mm-hmm.
So he knows. Like, he wrote, he's like, no, I know. Like, believe me. I wrote this movie. Like, this is my baby. I know what you're thinking if you're like a really sci-fi nerdy, like obsessed with world building kind of person like I am, I know what's bothering you. But guess what? It's part of my story. Like you're going to see what it is in the end. And that's what I loved about it. Cause by the end of the movie, I'm like, I got nothing now. Every single like nitpicking thing I had for this movie, he hit it.
That's like, cause there's a point in the movie, especially cause I'm watching it on a plane and I come in with low expectations. So as I'm getting entertained, I still like, I wasn't completely sold that it was going to be this great of a movie. And then like at the end, everything was like wrapped up in a nice, neat bow, but not the way I would have ever expected it to be. And I was just all like, wow. And then you just reflect on all the other parts that like, I just, you know, like just for us talking about it, like the other things that made it a great movie, you know, the subtleties of not being spoon-fed stuff, of having like fun entertainment, like it almost went along like an 80 or 90s action movie, but it was so smart.
Yes.
You know, like it did have this old like fun formula to it, even though it was dark, you know, because of his, maybe it was just his wisecracks that pulled it all together. And like some of the, you know, the cyberpunk feel that it kind of had going on too.
It did, and he wasn't like, I mean, he was funny for sure, but he wasn't like, you also felt like this is a regular guy who works on cars, too. So you don't get like that, you know, if a bunch of writers were in a room, these are some of the best one-liners you're ever going to hear. Like, you believe a guy like this would say shit like that. Like, when he's in the bar. Like, I keep going back to the bar scenes. I just thought that was so fucking cool. Like, he's trying to sound like a badass, but he does, but he doesn't. Like,
he's not super good at it.
No, not really.
He knows he's got a trick up his sleeve, but this is all new for him. It's not like he's been a badass his whole life.
Like, I love it when he asks the guy next, because he's supposed to be a quadriplegic. He's like, hey, can you hold that drink next to my mouth so I can drink it? And it's like this seedy bar, and the guy next to him's like, yeah, fuck it, why not? This paralyzed dude wants to get drunk. I'll fucking hold a drink by his mouth so he can drink it. And like, I love it. Like, little stuff like that. Like, he like goes to a bar, he's like, hey, can you do me a solid, man? Can you hold that drink next to my mouth so I can drink out of it? Like, just like shit like that. You're in a fucking basically a biker bar. And the dude next to him's like, yeah, sure, dude.
Oh, man.
There's
a homeless guy that's a quadriplegic or whatever. I've lit cigarettes for him and stuff, even though I was like, man, I hope he doesn't drop that and start on fire because he smells like alcohol too. Like, this is rough. Should I really be doing this?
I know, right?
But I give up money to it. It's like, I know he's going to spend it on booze and he's quadriplegic or something. How does he keep this whole thing together? Maybe he like lives at a home really close and every once in a while he gets away to do this and he's not supposed to. Or he like completely lives on the streets, which is just like mind blowing.
I know, and I haven't had that experience with somebody like quadriplegic or in a wheelchair, but I did. There was somebody I met in Chicago once where he came up to me and asked for change, and I usually will say no, and he's like, you know, I'm a veteran of Iraq or a veteran of, you know, Desert Storm. You know, dude, I had, you know, I got injured. You know, this IED went off or whatever, and I'm just like. I'm like, wow, really, dude? Like, is that what happened? He's like, yeah, dude, I had my leg, you know, I had my foot blown off. And I was just like, he said some horrible injury. I'm like, dude, prove it. He's like, all right. So he takes his shoe off and his foot's missing. Like, I thought he was full of shit. I thought he was just trying to get money for being a veteran and he was trying to build up this whole story. So I looked at.
How did you feel after that?
I gave him money at that point. I'm like, all right, that's pretty good. Like, I thought you were full of it, dude. I've had people come up to me and say, like, they're veterans, and I don't believe they're a veteran for a minute because you ask them one or two questions about the military and they can't answer them. This guy, like, he says he had an IED explosion, he got injured, and I was like, well, you know, prove it. You know, like, what, you're a veteran? Like, what do you mean? Like, what happened? And he takes off his shoe and his foot's missing. I'm like, okay, that's pretty good. That's okay, dude, here's some money, man. I thought you were just fucking totally lying to me to get some boost money.
that's intense, man. That's intense.
Yeah.
Yeah. So freaking, sorry, we're getting towards the end of this. I don't know how to wrap it up. We talked about the movie so much. I hope we didn't ruin it too much for anyone. You're going to watch it and still have fun, I hope. Maybe us getting too excited is to be like, I don't know about all the hype, so fuck you. or fuck us. I don't know. Maybe we ruined it for you. But movie's awesome. Movie's really fun. I definitely like to see more movies like this. It's something that could just keep happening. And on a weird side note at the end, I did watch about half of Rampage with The Rock.
Okay.
So, you know, the old video game Rampage?
Yeah, I know the game and I know the movie and I just have no comment.
Dude, it is so dumb and cartoonish. You're all like, well, I guess they tried to make really dumb sense of this video game and turn it into a big blockbuster The Rock movie. And they try so little to take it seriously. You're like, all right, I'm game. Like, if this is a bullshit thing anyway, like, if you guys aren't taking it seriously, I'm not going to take it seriously. I guess let's just have some fun. And so I surprisingly enjoyed it because of how comically bad it was, and it knew it was, and it, like, went along with it the whole time. It was great. It was great.
Come on, people. We all know what we're doing here.
Yeah, exactly. And a really big, like, wink to the audience type thing, I felt like. I didn't end up finishing it. I'll probably end up finishing it. It really doesn't matter. I think all that holds true, and no matter how it ends, I'll still feel this way about the movie.
All right, so what we can say is that Rampage is actually so bad it's good.
Yeah, I think so.
Upgrade is awesome. Cloverfield Paradox, I don't recommend it. It's basically a cheap version of Event Horizon. Death Note, I think is another movie we referenced in this show. I don't recommend it. If you like the anime show, watch the anime show. Don't watch the live action movie. It's garbage. And in general, you know, like these movies that try to convert anime to live action movies, just most of them, almost all of them are shit. They don't know what they're doing.
Yeah, so, like if you don't want to bother watching the anime, maybe watch the live action one. But if you watch the anime or think you'd like that at all or whatever, like don't bother with the live action one. It'll probably ruin it for you.
Yeah, and video game movies generally do terrible. Like Rampage is based on a video game, but I think they took the right approach. They're like, hey, let's just have fun with this.
Yeah, The video game didn't have too much of a story anyway.
Maybe no,
kind of play off of it. But yeah, it was really fun, and you just played it for a short period of time, and it was cool to get a lot of points on it. It was just like, you know, just really awesome carnage, and also you didn't just thinking about that because there was another Rock movie that I saw recently. Freaking Dwayne Johnson, I love that guy. Even though he's not a great actor, he's a great actor. Jumanji, the reboot that I thought I didn't want to like, we watched it the other night after getting back from I think from like Chicago or something, after that all that watching movies on the plane, I think we watched Jumanji, and it was it was actually really good adaptation for a new generation of the movie. I'm getting old enough now that my kids' movies that were originals are being, you know, rebooted and stuff. So
yeah.
I guess it's probably already happened with a bunch of other stuff, but this one just kind of hit close to home. You know, Robin Williams is gone too, and it's tough, man. And they did a really good job. I recommend watching Jumanji.
Yeah. I'm trying to think of a movie, a Rock movie that, I mean, the movie I liked a lot is where I forget the name of the movie, but he's like a star quarterback of a team and he finds out he has a daughter. And, like he has to like take custody of her and he's just like this total like fucking douchebag millionaire hotshot like captain of the football team quarterback of this NFL team, and now he has this little cute adorable daughter, and it just takes him down like a few pegs. It's fucking great. And what was the other one? I think it's Race to Witch Mountain, one with the alien kids.
Is it the Game Plan?
That sounds right. Hold on. Let me look it up. Yes. Yeah, Keira Sedgwick. Yep, that's it. And it also has, what's her? She's gorgeous. Rosalind Sanchez. She's amazing. So she's in it too.
It's no, like, The Rock makes bad movies, but he somehow doesn't make a bad movie. because he's just so likable. Like, he makes so many bad movies, but it's like, man, it's got Dwayne Johnson in it, man. I'm going to like it, even if it's bad. Like, Central Intelligence, awesome bad movie. Totally loved it. I don't even like Kevin Hart, and that's why I wasn't really going to like... I didn't think I'd like Jumanji because, again, he's with Kevin Hart. And it's like, I don't always like him. Like, he's funny or whatever, but sometimes he annoys me. And, like, he doesn't always carry the movie. But, like, I guess him and Dwayne Johnson I like for whatever reason. His Central Intelligence was fun.
I want to see Baywatch. I'm curious about that. Moana, too, where he does a voice.
I've watched a lot of Dwayne Johnson movies. I guess I subconsciously know I'm going to like it no matter what. Baywatch was awesome. Moana was awesome. Moana was amazing because there was no romance story in it. It was just about like a woman, strong female character, just like, you know, going on this whole journey and everything. It was pretty awesome. Like, breaks a lot of boundaries, and it's still a great like award winning movie. Like they do. And then Baywatch made fun of itself so freaking much that it was awesome. Like it really, like constantly Zac Efron's characters all like, we are lifeguards. This is not what we do. We should be calling the police. And Drayton's like, you don't get it. This is Baywatch or something like that. And then they just change her out. And then like later in the movie, he's like, no, I get it. And he's like totally a part of the team and trying to break some big international drug ring or something. It's just not the lifeguard's job. So like there's so many jokes like that, and then like Dwayne Johnson's like lifeguard character could actually do some pretty larger than life things that are just hilarious. Like in the beginning, opening scene is just sets the tone for how serious the movie takes itself.
that like overshadows the rest of the movies I'm seeing here because I do want to see Baywatch now. His movie. The Hercules movie was disappointing. It was like it definitely didn't work. He played the Tooth Fairy in one movie. Oh, the other guys. He was that in that.
Was amazing. That's the best buddy cop movie of our generation. 90s and 2000s combined, I'd say.
Get Smart. That movie's much funnier than I think it gets credit for. I think Get Smart was pretty good. Yeah, it's Anne Hathaway, Steve Carell, Dwayne The Rock Johnson. It's obviously like tongue in cheek, and it doesn't have like the modern like ridiculous like it's not dirty. Like it doesn't have like a ton of sex jokes and like shit like that. Like it's more of like the classic Get Smart jokes, like spy spoof. And I think that's why it doesn't do well, because I think most people expect from a comedy to have a certain level of raunchiness.
Especially with your Steve Carell and everything, it's got to go. It's got to push some boundaries at some point, and it didn't. It was just stay true to the genre, I guess.
Yeah, they were trying to stay true to the original like source material of Get Smart and try to be just a funny spy spoof movie.
Well, and Steve Carell loves spoofs. Have you watched Angie Tribeca?
Not yet.
See, Angie Tribeca is like the modern Naked Gun. It's so good. It's so freaking good. It's spoof on spoof on spoof. It's better than Naked Gun. It's faster. It's smarter and dumber all at the same time. Watch Angie Tribeca, man. And it was Steve Carell and his wife were like in like Tribeca, New York, and they just randomly like made like said Angie Tribeca for some reason, and they started to make up her backstory. It was just like came up as a name and a character, and then like eventually they casted Rashida Jones, and it became their spooftacular movie.
That's all right. I'll have to check that out because it reminds me, and I know it's not the same thing, but I watch a lot of Brooklyn Nine-Nine, which is.
Brooklyn Nine-Nine is really amazing, but like this Angie Tribeca is really true to like the spoof like genre, like a Mel Brooks movie, Split Police Squad type, Hot Shots spoof movie, like with really fast dumb stuff that's forgotten immediately, and they just move on to the next one. Like it's really true to that genre of just absurdness. So, like, I give them credit for it. It was a bold thing to do because it's not, like, modern, but they do a really good job of it.
That's good. All right. All right, that's got to make it on my list then. And, I think we've exhausted all the leads here now.
this is a fun one. It started with sci-fi, ended with comedy. I could just, like, there's so many great shows out, and, like, I don't always get to think of them. It's like you could just draw a blank.
Yeah, golden age of television, and we're talking movies.
Yeah,
for sure. Well, it's been fun as always. I think we can sign it off there. And, well, I don't know what the topic will be next time, so I guess we'll all find out together.
All right.
All right, man. You have a good one.
You too.